Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. ArchiCAD is the official BIM software of the Entree Architect community. ArchiCAD BIM software enables design, collaboration, visualization, and project delivery no matter the project size or complexity. With flexible licensing options and a dedicated support team to guide us along the way, ArchiCAD is an ideal choice for firms and projects of any size. I encourage you to reach out and talk to the folks at Graphisoft by visiting our own dedicated webpage at graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. There's even an exclusive special offer waiting for our Entree Architect community. Go now to graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioned to help make your architecture firm a success. That's graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. John Patrick Winberry, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thanks so much for having me.
John Patrick Winberry is the founding partner and architect at The Up Studio, an architecture, interior, and brand design studio in New York City, specializing in contemporary design. John's approach to architecture balances theory and approachability, comfortably guiding the client to an understanding of complex design theories. He is particularly drawn to simplicity and duality in design, using minimalist designs to maximize solutions across projects, all while trying to bring joy and fun to the process. If you've seen anything that The Up Studio has been doing, that's it. That's The Up Studio. You should go to theupstudio.com as a website. Alongside the architectural practice, John has lectured at the AIA, Architectural Record, and at New York Institute of Technology. He's also been an active design critic for multiple schools of architecture. He's recently done a video session with us at Entree Architect, and he's building a fantastic studio, an interesting studio at the Up Studio, doing multidisciplinary design, doing architecture, interior, and brand design, which fascinates me. I love that. I love what you're building. Very unique and very clearly differentiated from other studios. Welcome, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks again, Mark.
When did the studio start?
So we're coming up on 13 years right now. So that seems crazy to say that out loud. Obviously, you know, having a firm for many years, it's just the time just starts to kind of go by there. But yeah, 13 years, it's amazing to be kind of rocking and rolling still.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I want to talk about The Up Studio. You've built a very unique design studio there with architecture, interior, and brand design, lots of graphic design. and doing it in a very unique way. And I want to understand how you started it, how you built it, maybe some of the hurdles that you had to clear in order to sort of get it to where it is today. So I want to dive deep into the Up Studio, but before that, I want to dive deep into your story. I want to understand your origin story. You, John, how did you discover your passion for architecture? Maybe what inspired you or who inspired you to become an architect, and share that story to where we are today?
Yeah. I mean, Mark, how far back do we want to go here?
As far as you want to go back.
I mean, here's, you know, there was a recent, an old neighbor of ours told me something which I thought was very, very interesting, which I don't remember. But she said, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, I told her that I wanted to design a building where the entire neighborhood, or where I grew up, everyone could have their own floor. And it would be hundreds of stories, and every family would have their own floor, so we could always be together. And I just thought, I mean, it kind of like shook me a little. I mean, because I never, you know, my family, I'm the youngest of seven children, and design just was never part of the conversation. You know, it was a working class family, an Irish Italian family. That's a very kind of typical thing for where I was in the Northeast, where we grew up in New York. And when she said that to me, I said, "Oh, it's interesting that in my DNA, I guess it was there, but it was never really untapped until high school. There was a teacher there that saw I had some technical abilities, and allowed me to take a CAD class like on the side, essentially independent study. And I could just make my own course and start to just learn the software. I was interested in technology and what that actually meant. So it was like AutoCAD 11 or 12 back then. And it was...
Who was the teacher? What was the name of the teacher? Do you remember?
Oh, I think Mr. Rudinelli was his name.
What was his class? What did he
teach? It was like a technology class. It was like a shop technology.
Yep.
So it was like building and stuff like that. And he allowed me to, so I took one course with that. So I was building all these things. And then the other course was just like, go study some technical things. I think you may like architecture. I didn't know what architecture was at all. And I graduated high school and a bunch of my friends went off to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And college wasn't a thing in my family. It was not like a mandatory aspect. So I took, you know, some time to kind of figure out where I was. And I ended up landing at an architecture firm because I just wanted to see what that was like, to see if that was something of interest. And I was working for this firm for about a year. And my now business partner was working there as well. And I remember he came in one day and we were just doing large family homes, you know, just traditional large homes. But he came in one day with like a little model, just looked like a piece of sculpture. And I was so intrigued by what that was. And I, in my back of my head, I didn't even say anything to him, but I remember thinking like, he's studying architecture. Why is he like, what is this form thing that he's looking at? It looked just like an abstract piece of art. And then him and I, my partner, Adam, and I snuck into a famous house that was by our studio, right by Richard Meyer. It was being renovated. It was one of his first houses. And we snuck in. I remember going up to the front door. We were 18 or 19 years old, and we went up to the front door. There was a form in there, and I said we were the architects. And that dude could have just let us go, right? He could have just been like, later, you know, but he was very kind. He knew, obviously, that we weren't, but knew that we were interested, and he let us in. And I always get kind of like goosebumps when I tell this story, because we split up through the house, and this particular house that Richard Meyer designed, is there was no steps in the house. It was all ramps. So all these ramps brought you to like all these different levels. I had never seen anything like that. And I was on a series of ramps. And as I was going up, the sun was kind of like coming through this like one glazed this glazed wall, and the sun hit me. And like, I was on a ramp. It was just like this magical moment. And it kind of came to me that like this firm or this person thought about my path through the architecture. And it just like overnight shifted my entire perspective on what architecture could be and and almost like the power of it and how it could kind of, I don't know, just change perception. It was really moving to me. So almost like immediately after I ended up enrolling into architecture school, and I studied at NYIT, New York Institute of Technology. There's a New York City campus and an old Westbury campus out on Long Island. And I studied out there. And it was just, I don't know, it just fired me up in a way that and to this day, I'm still always going back to that moment of like, I want to give our families that experience that I had that day, and try to kind of be that thoughtful in our architecture.
Yeah. What a great story.
It was fun. It was cool.
Yeah. So you to have an experience as an 18-year-old in a Richard Meier house that you're not supposed to be in is pretty exciting as well.
Yeah.
I would love to do that today.
Sure.
You went to NYIT out in Long Island, and what did you do after you graduated?
So, one of my partners, Adam Wanasalia, who I was talking about, was working at a firm, we ended up working together there for a bit. That architect, Don Lee H. Murray, who had passed away a couple of years ago, but at the time just didn't have anyone to hand the firm down to. So most of my friends from school went to Gensler or KPF or, NEOD, a lot of the big firms in New York City. Yeah. And we had that opportunity, but this architect was like, hey, if you want to come in, and just take it over, you can. I mean, we were so young and so naive. We're like, sure, let's let's do it. And that experience was amazing because it was very rocky, obviously. And it was a couple of years, we just took over his firm and we're trying to run it. But it wasn't who we were or what we wanted to do.
What kind of work did the firm do?
Mostly residential, very traditional, work. And again, it was interesting as more of like a client understanding of like how to navigate that experience of dealing with clients and kind of understanding how to kind of funnel them into certain directions. And, we learned a lot, just, feet on fire and just in the midst of all the drama, we were just learning as we go. But we realized that wasn't what we wanted to do. So, we pivoted and I just was like, let's start a firm, essentially like a sister company. And rather than do competitions, like most firms were doing at the time to get work, let's pitch our traditional clients, like a modern twist on it. And it took many years to have one person convinced that that was the way to go. But that first project just set us off. Because essentially it proved that there was an appetite for what we were trying to do, which was very progressive for the area that we were working in and very jarring for a lot of people, which is stuff that we like to do is kind of, shake things up a little. And so that was my partner, Adam Monticelia, and we were working with another partner of mine now, Jeffrey Ramirez. You bring up our brand design and our graphics. Jeffrey came in almost instantaneously, and we connected on this idea that as architects, we are horrible visual representational people. It sounds like we should be, but we're just not. And I have a theory on this, if you want to hear it, which essentially is like when we go to architecture school, it's a very solo endeavor. There might be one or two studios that you actually will collaborate, but for the most part, for 4 or 5 years, depending on what your program is, you're essentially like in a bunker by yourself. And at the end of that semester, you're pinning up every single piece of thing that you've done, almost like a badge of honor for your professor, right? Like, look what I've done to get to this. Look at my hero's journey, right? To solve this complex problem that you put forth to us. And what I feel is a lot of architects actually do that today. Still, I see it all the time. And we were doing it very early on. And then we met Jeff through a friend, and he instantly was like, your presentation style is just outlandish. He studied at Pratt, and it was just a very kind of simplistic way of thinking about showing our work. And he was like, what's the point? Like, what are we trying to say with this design? And let's just show that. And that was like another like major milestone for our studio in the first couple of years of like editing down our work to be like super hyper focused to kind of what we wanted to kind of get forth to the client.
So you talked about taking over that firm. And then when you decided that that wasn't the direction you wanted to go, you said you started a new company, a sister yeah. company.
Yep.
And so explain that to me. So you were running two separate companies and
yeah, I mean, you know, now that we have some great exposure with the Up Studio, it's like, we're fine. Like back then we were, it's not like we were hiding it. It's just essentially the team of people that we had in our studio worked on whatever project came in, but it then got branded under whatever company it was actually like, quote unquote, like representing. So right. like I said, for many years, we tried to get work approved for the Up Studio and just clients were not buying what we were trying to pitch. But then once it started happening, we would just brand that through the Up Studio website. But yeah, essentially we were running two companies for many years.
And that was, it sounds like it was because you wanted to have two separate brands. You wanted to have one brand that sort of focused on this more traditional work that you've been doing or that firm had been known for, and that you consciously took a choice and started another company in order to build a second brand that was a more modern brand so it didn't dilute the first brand. Is that essentially what happened?
Exactly. Yeah. The idea being that like our clients that wanted a traditional thing didn't want to know that we did glass boxes. And right. then our modern clients that wanted a glass box did yeah. not, you know. And honestly, we were modern, you know, that's how we were taught. It was just, so it felt almost like intuitive to kind of split them. And it was difficult, you know, at one point, you know, we just essentially had like two LLCs and then we were just like, well, this is kind of crazy. And then, so like we actually merged them and then doing like a doing business as type of thing. So, and it worked and it allowed us almost like the freedom not to rush the Up Studio. We had this like early growth that we could like slowly build because essentially the other firm was almost like funding us to go. Just like if yeah. someone goes for a competition, we just said, instead of doing competitions, we're just going to like focus on trying to build the Up Studio to see if we can actually get it there.
Yeah. And so what happened to the other firm? Because today it's the Up Studio.
Yeah, I mean the firm is there. It's, you know, it's honestly I mean maybe its last project was 4 or 5 years ago. It's just not, you know, it's not really active. It's available. We have one of our project leaders. If a project comes in, he'll run that project for us. He's, you know, very versed in that aesthetic. But again, I don't, it doesn't really ever come up anymore, which
right.
is
yeah.
kind of interesting. Yeah.
So you've essentially gone all in on the Up Studio and that's your brand. You still have the other brand, but it's there just in case you need it.
Exactly.
So you don't have to turn work away. If you wanted to take a project that wasn't, you know, didn't resonate with the Up Studio brand, you could
right.
use that other brand to service that client.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's interesting. You say it when you said it like that, it's pretty funny. I remember, and I don't remember, it was one of the really big firms in the city. They had essentially like a secondary company that was just doing like strip malls that they would never tell anybody. And yeah. like, that always seemed so like crazy to me. Like why would a firm that's so established need to do that? But like, here's the reality, you know, we're all running studios and there's essentially, there's a, just a math game at, you know, at a certain point that you have to be very, very cognizant of, that took us many years to kind of embrace or understand. And we're still learning about that today, even, you know, 13, yeah. 14 years in. But yeah, so I do think it again, I always think about it as it almost allowed us to grow in a very, very kind of meaningful way. And we could be very, very slow in that process, which was really, really helpful early on.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things we teach at Entre Architect is that you need to find your target market, right? Your ideal client.
Sure.
And so by having one brand that services one ideal client, right? Because the ideal client for a traditional large modern home or a traditional home is very different than a client who wants a glass modern home. right? And so that, and if you try to mix them, right, then you dilute both brands and both brands lose, right? And so by splitting off the Up Studio as a separate brand and a separate company, in your case, you can focus all in on the design of modern architecture and interiors and attract that client. When they hit the Up Studio website, it's very clear what you do. And you know, you resonate with the client that's looking for that type of work.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and again, it's been 13 years of all in and kind of just and running and just having a blast.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by Arcat.com. Can't find the product data that you're looking for? You might be using the wrong search engine. Broad searches result in consumer products, out-of-date information, and websites that hide or don't have the information that you're looking for. If you need specifications, CAD, or BIM, Arcat.com is your search engine. Find and download the up-to-date data that you need fast. Arcat.com is free and requires no registration. So try Arcat today. That's ARCAT.com. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Let's go back to the beginning of when you started building the Up Studio and it started gaining traction and you realized, oh, this is where we're going. We're going all in on this brand. We have enough projects that enough clients who want the work that we do. Where'd you go from there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we found early on was it was interesting as these new clients were coming in and wanting to kind of be progressive in the way that we were thinking about our designs and trying to push the limits. But internally, we felt it felt pretty chaotic, right? It was just, there's a lot of noise that happens in architecture. There's a lot of outside influences that can happen. So internally, we felt like, let's build a system and take a more systematic approach to our designs. So we internally built this idea that any project that comes in has to meet these three major parameters. The first being environmental. So we're really passionate about sustainability and passive design and what that means. Also in that context is like, there's a massive ball of fire in the sky and we want to harness that in our architecture. So if you look at our work, you'll notice that like, or all four facades, if there are four, are usually radically different. The sun is just doing something different throughout the day. So we want our architecture to react to that. Then the second bucket is our client constraints. So that's their budget, their time frame, and their program. And then finally, the third is our concepts. I would say that age taught us that like when we first started the Up Studio, it was all concept, meaning like we let that go above everything. And I think that's just like, youthfulness of design, right?
So design like, above all.
Exactly. It's going to get through. Don't worry about the budget. Don't worry about the zoning. Don't worry about anything. Like the design will save it. But like, you know, age has taught us that compromise is king. And actually the work that gets the most published for us is done in this systematic approach where essentially not one of those buckets should go higher than the other. And when all three of those are equal at the end, that's the stuff that's super resonating with people and really, really, you know, the stuff that wins awards for us and stuff. So again, I think that's like a great lesson for us early on that like we needed that system. We needed those guardrails because like, you know, knowing the client's budget or knowing that, you know, there's a zoning parameter that we have to overlay onto our design, you know, like no zoning board's going to approve it because they think it's going to win like, like an Archie award or something. It's like, they don't care. They're just like, does it meet your zoning criteria? And so it's like, you know, that taught us a lot about this idea of like, just use that parameter as like, almost like a design principle. Like, it's there and use it as a way to kind of fight yourself to kind of solve the solution inside of those. So that happens on the internal side. And then on the external side.
Before you do external, can you repeat please. those three things that you filtered the project through again?
Yep. So first is environmental consideration. So that's, again, like the passive aspect of architecture. Then it's our client constraints. So that's just like their program, budget, and timeframe. And then third is our concepts.
Got it.
Yeah. So those three really become the kind of guiding principles. And internally as a studio, we'll, you know, one of them will start to take a little too much of a lead, and we'll have to, you know, kind of circle ourselves back and rally behind the other two and try to kind of level those out. And that's a constant kind of give and take. And again, it's just like age, right? It's like, it's that push and pull, which I think is really interesting for design.
So when you say internally, you're focused on these three things. So when you're looking at a potential project, you're evaluating it based on these parameters. And then as you develop it, you're also making sure that one is not dominating the other.
Exactly. We just want to make sure that, like, I think early on, we were obsessed with the idea of a cantilever and like the power of what that meant in architecture, like removing kind of the base and letting these objects kind of just like float in the air. It's really beautiful. And there's a poetry to that. But the reality is there's a very, very, significant effect on budget with that single move, right? That one move over anything.
Yeah.
And if there was this idea of this like poetry of this kind of volume extruding out, kind of living above the land and all of that stuff, that's really beautiful. And we want that narrative to be there. However, if the client can't afford it, then it's not something to show them, because the client's going to fall in love with it. They always do.
Right.
And then we have to deliver the news of like, oh, you can't afford it. So, right. Like that's not, we ran through a lot of those early on in our career of like showing people things that they couldn't afford. And by the way, we're still, you know, to be frank, we're still struggling with budgets, you know, just like every firm, but I think we've gotten a way better handle on it now.
So before I interrupted you, you were headed into external. So
yeah, I think it's interesting the way that we think about duality, even in our designs, but then internally. So essentially, we create these like design systems for our studio that we have to solve. So one of them was that internal system, like, hey, everything's going off the rails. Like, how do we focus ourselves? And it's like, okay, these three parameters can actually be our North Star on almost every project. But then what Jeffrey taught us was that, and again, I think this is like the clarity that Adam and I needed. Jeffrey teaches us like, be very precise in how we show our work and be very curated in the way that we describe what we're doing. So essentially, we created something called Clarity of Design, and that's our distribution to our clients. That's our client-facing presentation. So essentially, it takes the home design process and divides it into 15 to 20 meetings throughout the life of the design. And what we're looking for is just delivering the very basic needs of that day. So early on, we do not show renderings, we don't show floor plans, we don't show any of that. We are very, very precise in the information that we give our clients. Essentially, we want to feed them the information that they need at that moment, because every client can get lost. We can get lost as well, right? Yeah. Anyone can. So if we can guide that process and be very precise in what we're looking for, one, it empowers our team, because the team then gets the information they need to keep the momentum on the project. And the client takes ownership. They almost become empowered by this this way of representing our work. And they fall in love with the why of what we're doing. And it becomes this amazing partnership in the design process. So from the client side, that system has been, you know, so powerful in us convincing clients to kind of do the work that we're trying to get done.
I love the idea of providing only the information that the client needs at that moment.
Yeah.
Right. So they don't get overwhelmed. They don't get distracted. They see exactly what you're presenting and only what you're presenting, and can make a decision on that one decision, which I'm assuming probably also helps the decision process and expedites the completion of a project.
It does. It's the goal being like, if we're doing a family home for somebody, for a client, I don't want them asking where the laundry room is on day one. I promise you, we're going to get there. We'll get you all the parts. That's our job. We'll make sure it's there. But first, let's take a step back and like look at the real macro understanding of your property. What's the big ball of fire doing? Are there any special views on your property? You know, how are we being sensitive to the environment? How is the architecture embedding itself into the landscape? You know, those type of things are very like pie in the sky conversations. So I want the client to focus on that and just that on day one, And then we walk them step by step through that information. And it's a constantly evolving system. We're getting better at kind of seeing, oh, like on, you know, on presentation 7, we actually are, we're giving a little too much. Let's pull back a little, or we're not giving enough. Like we need to give them a little more information because we're getting a logjam, you know, during the, you know, the DD process or something. So it's kind of cool to like watch it as a, almost like an evolving design problem just in itself. You know, I think that's a really fun way to think about it.
As you talk about that, I'm asking myself, is that system a cultural system or is it a documented system? Is it something that you've actually put to a document and said, this is what we're going to do and how we're going to do it when we're presenting to clients? Or is it more of a cultural, this is how we do things here?
I think it's a little of both. It's 100% documented. We're like, we want the team is growing. So new members that are coming in, this is how we present our work. This is how we kind of think about the path of the project. And now as we grow, different team members are presenting to clients, which is, you know, I would say Adam, Jeff, and myself are, for better or worse, we're very controlling in our thought process. Yeah, you know,
as most architects are.
Exactly.
That's a very big decision to allow a team member to present to a client.
Yeah. So as it's evolved, you know, that's had to happen. It's just the nature of the game as you grow. So they've kind of fallen. The team is kind of like, I think it also, it just helps everyone because essentially it's like, you don't have to go in here and memorize all the, like, just follow the slides that we're building, just follow the narrative and just coach the client through this narrative. This is it. So I've watched team members struggle early on and then just like grow into it.
Yeah.
And they're like champions now on some of this stuff. And it's like, we're sitting back and just watching them evolve it and get it, make it better and make it stronger. So it's really a fun kind of thing to watch grow on itself.
That's the power of a system, right?
Yeah.
Is that you figure out how to do it, right? You experiment, things fail, things succeed. You focus on the things that succeed, keep doing better, keep documenting what works, adjust it, right? And then eventually you'll have a system. And then once you have a system, then you introduce that system to other team members and say, this is how we do it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a learning process through the team member learning that system. But once they learn it, it's a beautiful thing, right? It takes the weight off your shoulders because you know you can trust the system that it works, right? And as long as you run the system the way it's designed, with the cultural side, right, with the understanding of how we do things here, then it flows and it succeeds.
Yeah, it's interesting too. What we found is it works on all scales, which is kind of, I mean, we thought it could, but like we're doing a 600 square foot cabin in upstate New York right now. And we just finished essentially a 20,000 square foot family compound in Florida. And we used the same exact delivery system to the client. And it's just like magic. I can't, you know, so I think that's something that we're really proud of. And making sure that the team kind of falls in love with it, but really like the client experience, like removing the friction and just like letting them kind of embrace it has been really, really exciting for us.
Yeah. Systemizing and documenting the client experience is so important. And it's only getting more important, right? As machines come our way and start doing more of the work that we do and AI starts doing things that architects have traditionally done, it's that client experience that's going to differentiate us and make us more successful as architects.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to kind of see, you know, we're all part of this. We're at like the, you know, step one, and it's going to go step 100, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
It's quick, boy. So yeah, I do think Jeff from our team is a really big proponent about talking about the client experience and really championing that it's joyful and there's fun in the process. We're kind of quirky group and we want that energy to come out in what we're doing and every aspect of our projects.
Yeah. And not only do you end up with great projects, you have end up with very happy clients who want to refer you and talk about you every chance they get.
Yeah, that's always good, right? You know, build that, you know, kind of plant that tree and just and let it go out there with our clients. So yeah, it's awesome to watch.
So what does the future of the Up Studio look like? Where are you going in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think from our studio's perspective, we're extremely interested in taking our designs to this next level and trying to push the limit of how far we can take our projects. I think I hope none of my clients listen to, I mean, you know, every architect knows though that like the way I think about it essentially is that every project is a building block, because like right. it's never going to be the last one. And it's a learning thing. Like, and in every single project we learn, oh, like that reveal detail actually is the way that we did it. And we did it wrong on 3 projects, but going forward, like this detail is so beautiful. Like, and it really resonates the materiality of the interiors. And we have a director of interiors, Giulia Trelletti, and she, you know, preaches this idea of materiality in our projects. And like, how are they joining? How are they meeting? How are we resolving those transitions, which are always so difficult? And I just think, like, from our perspective, we're at a point in our studio's life that like we have these clients that are allowing us to push further than we've ever been able to push before. And we want to use technology, we want to use, you know, thoughtfulness in all of our designs, and to see if we can kind of break through. I don't know, this, you know, it's just a boundary that we're putting on ourselves, but like essentially break through to this next level of design and really try to create some special pieces of architecture.
Well, those constraints seem to do well for you in the past. They've worked. And so adding some constraints to your future certainly makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our goal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great to watch you grow. The studio, the website is beautiful. The work that you do is beautiful. You should go check it out. It's theupstudio.com is the website. John, before we wrap things up here, I want to ask you this one important question that I ask everybody. Our audience is primarily small firm business owner architects. And I ask the question is, what is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky question, but I think my answer is unequivocally, I don't know if I said that right, but my answer is this: immediately find, if you don't understand business, which most architects do not, and myself and my 2 partners did not, we actually reached out to you very, you know, midway through our growth as a studio. And we were having, from an outside perspective, we were having a ton of success, but the back of house, right behind the curtain, the running of the company was still just a mess. Just like we didn't know what we were doing. You just don't know what you don't know. It's like that simple. So I would recommend every single firm to have either a business coach or partnered with a business opportunity that is showing you the bones behind how to run a company, because we none of us know it. None of us know, you know, that we should be charging additional services for our work because the client has constant scope creep. And you're like, you can't because you're so intimate and you don't want to break that. It's a business transaction, right? In the end of the day, you're running a business. You have to pay your team well. You have to give them a good experience so they don't have burnout, so you don't have burnout. So finding a coach of some sort, whether, again, that's through a company, which we've explored a couple of them, or your system helped us out early on, that was monumental in the shift in our studio. Because we were hitting burnout. We were working like 90-hour weeks. And at the end of the year, there was just like nothing left. And we're like, how is this possible? Right? Like, we're winning awards and like how, you know, and it comes down to it. Like, we just weren't running the company correctly. We didn't know how to do our fee structures. We had no idea what our, how many hours it took us to complete our work. We had just like all the basic things. So that has radically shifted our studio along. It allows us to design more too. I think actually we're heavily design focused. I don't think there's, that's who we are. And we're always going to be like that. So we had this like early resistance to this, like, you know, we're a design firm, right? Like, design firms don't worry about that stuff. It's art, which is the most naive thing ever. And the amount of money that we left on the table to be as candid as possible is just, it's actually sickening. But what it taught me early on was this is a design problem in itself.
Right. Like
running the business while no one wants to talk about it, there is some really sexy design things that you have to like figure out. And it's like a cool design problem that we essentially just like rolled up our sleeves and on year six. And we're like, okay, well, we either figure this out or, you know, we're all going to go work at Gensler or something and let's see if we can do it. And we did it. And that's like, that is a very, very powerful thing. So that would be my single piece of advice is find somebody to help you understand the bones of running a company from the basics, like the bare bones. And I wish I had that on day one and I didn't, but that would have been, you know, a really, really big shift in our studio if we had that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad that Entre Architect is a part of your story.
It is.
I appreciate you bringing that up. It is. That's the thing that keeps me going, right? When I see a firm like the Up Studio and where you are today and knowing that we had a little part in that, is immensely fulfilling. Is fuel for me to continue doing what I'm doing. And I am very grateful that that you found us, you know, because that's the mission,
right? Yeah.
is to help architects find that. And the Up Studio is a perfect example of my mantra, profit, then art, right?
Yeah.
Focus on the business, build a strong business with systems that work and, you know, let all of that stuff happen. And then when it does happen, right, you have these systems in place and you've built a strong, thriving business, then you get to play and you get to design these amazing projects like you do at the Up Studio. It's a perfect example of that. And so I'm really happy that you came by here and shared your experience, shared your systems, and inspired some listeners. I appreciate you.
Awesome, Mark. Thank you so much. And from the entire team at the Up Studio, we greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming by and sharing your knowledge at Entre Architect Podcast. If you liked this episode of Entre Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, share a link with a friend. That's how Entre Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Please share a rating, write a review, share a link to this episode with a friend. I'd appreciate it. Links to all our sponsors and all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entre Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. It's the network dedicated to architects, engineers, and construction pros. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at Gable Media at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Go check it out. We have, I think, 13 podcasts over there now. Gablemedia.com. And before we wrap up, a special thank you to our partners at Graphisoft for helping our community of architects make the transition to BIM with ArchiCAD software. Go now to graphisoft.com/us/entrearchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioning to help make your architecture firm a success. Visit graphisoft.com/us/entrearchitect to learn more. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Entre Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and go share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick. So when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gary. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.